What's up, everybody? Louie DiBiase here. Today's Locked On Eagles is sponsored by Built Bar, the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON at BuiltBar.com to get $10 off your first order and an extra $5 this week until the 31st. Now on with the show. Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. Louie DiBiase here joining you, as always, alongside my co-host Gino Camilleri on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome into this Thursday edition of the show, and welcome back, Mr. Gino Camilleri. What's going on, brother?
Not much, man. Just living the dream right now. It's this dead period in sports. Slowly getting to see some soccer, and we're hearing that training camp should be opening up soon. And here in New York, they're starting to open up things sports-wise, and we're one of the states that's been mostly affected by it. So to see that, it's good progress. I know the governor of Pennsylvania came out and saying that they could get going for the Eagles training camp, so it's good to see. And what I hear from guys like Brandon Graham is that the virtual offseason is going well, and I think he made an excellent point saying that they still have the same head coach, which is a huge advantage going into this year, which likely all OTAs are going to be shortened. I know they're already moving stuff around, so this is a huge advantage for the Eagles, and I really like that they have this core there that really is leading this group, this new young group, into battle. Basically, next year you have Carson Wentz on your defense, you have Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham back there, along with Rodney McLeod. Jalen Mills is the heart and soul, and then your entire offensive line is returning as well. So if you think about communication issues going into these first couple weeks between quarterback, O-line, running back, wide receivers, I think the Eagles should be at the forefront kind of being okay there because of what I've been hearing from the players, what the coaches have been saying, and I really think this team is in a good spot this offseason. I'm really excited for the guys to actually get on the field.
No, 100%. We were even talking about it on the show the other day, how the Eagles' continuity is a big advantage right now, considering what COVID-19 has done to NFL teams and their offseason preparations. But it is good news, though, that they will be able to get on the field this summer because, you know, Carson Wentz does have new weapons with Jalen Reagor and Marquise Goodwin, John Hightower, Quez Watkins, getting back that chemistry with DeSean Jackson. And then on defense, while, you know, a lot of the same core guys are back, you know, Jalen Mills is moving positions to safety from corner, and there's a CB2 battle between Avante Maddox and Sidney Jones. And, you know, on the defensive line, too, I'm sure they're going to try to get more creative with how to use Fletcher Cox, Javon Hargrave, and Malik Jackson together, some brand new linebackers. So while I think the Eagles do have the advantage when it comes to continuity, especially in the NFC East, I am glad that things are starting to get better and open up in Pennsylvania so they can get back on the field and mold this new-look team for 2020. Coming up on today's edition of Locked On Eagles, me and Gino are going to get into some potential big-time contributors for the Birds in 2020 that might be overlooked right now. Obviously, you have the big names that everybody expects to be stars for this team, right? Carson Wentz, Fletcher Cox, you know, the entire offensive line, basically, Miles Sanders, Zach Ertz, DeSean Jackson coming back. But what are some names that are going to be instrumental to the team's success next year that maybe we aren't talking about enough? So that's coming up in segments 2 and 3 on today's edition of the show. But, Gino, before we get into that, the NFL made some rule changes today, and one of them actually was proposed by the Eagles. However, one rule that did not go through was the one that I was most excited about that the Eagles did propose, and it was the onside kick alternative that the Eagles proposed to the league that basically if a team decides they don't want to go for the what's virtually almost an impossible play now, an onside kick. It was I think teams 2 times out of 32 last year were successful in onside kicks, which was 6%. The year before it was 8%. Historically, it's like 13.2. So basically it's a play that you just need so much to go right for it to actually convert and for a team to get the ball back late in a football game. So the Eagles proposed, hey, what if twice a game, you only get 2 opportunities to do this a game, but what if a team elected to, instead of go for an onside kick, they get a 4th and 15 play on their own 25-yard line? And how this would have worked was basically the Eagles or any team that wants to, you know, go for this alternative would tell the official before the kickoff, right? So once they decide they're going to go for this 4th and 15, they have to go for it, even if there's a penalty or whatever. because the ref would tell the other side and, you know, they would go for it that way. The NFL didn't go for it. I'm pretty disappointed, Gino. 4th and 15 is historically not that crazy of a success rate compared to onside kicks. It's, I think, 16.8% versus 13.2 historically. I was kind of wondering if 4th and 15 was maybe too generous for a Carson Wentz, for a Lamar Jackson, a Patrick Mahomes. But for me, if it was either between that or just the onside kick, I would have wished that I would have wanted that to go through, and I'm kind of disappointed the NFL did not go for it.
Totally agree. And for the fact that they were going to keep the onside kick rule, it just adds another element to the game plan. I mean, it is the NFL, and they don't like to do a lot of common sense things, like the sky judge was nixed for some reason. But I think they'll come to their senses, especially with these leagues the past couple years, the AAF and the XFL, which have done things like that. And I mean, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but the yellow line to mark the first down wasn't even invented by the NFL. Right. It was invented by Vince McMahon in the first iteration of the XFL. So they're going to continue to go with what fans think. And, I mean, especially teams like the New Orleans Saints and their fans, they never let things go away. So I'm sure there will be a situation this year when a team misses an onside kick and they could have got, like, Mahomes has a chance to go 4th and 15 or an onside kick. You're going to put it in Mahomes' hands 10 times out of 10. Well, and as much as I love Jake Elliott, I do the same with Carson Wentz.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I think that's why maybe some teams that don't have a Patrick Mahomes or a Carson Wentz didn't go for it, because while the numbers historically say that it's not that much more of a successful play versus an onside kick, in the modern day NFL, when you have all these mobile quarterbacks with big arms that can extend plays outside of structure, you might not want that to be the play that it comes down to late in a football game. And again, I get that. I kind of went back and forth with it this week when I was talking about that proposal. But again, if it comes down to just the onside kick or that, like, for me, yeah, maybe a 4th and 20 is better, even a 4th and 25. Like, if they basically need a Hail Mary, I still think that's almost as good as an onside kick. But again, if it was 4th and 15 versus an onside kick, and again, like you said, they would keep the onside kick with this proposal. It's just another alternative, then I would definitely go for that. But the NFL didn't yet. They said, of course, you know, it's not totally off the table for future years, but they need to discuss it more. The three rules that did go through, the Eagles one is interesting, Gino. It's to make permanent the expansion of automatic replay reviews to include scoring plays and turnovers negated by a foul. What do you think about that one?
I know that if you're going to do away with it, and the pass interference rule in particular, you just have to structure it better. I think the NFL gets in their way a lot, and they're like, let's put a rule on top of a rule to fix another rule. Like, they have to stop doing that. I mean, because there's so much red tape in this league, the guys just want to go out there and play, and that's what fans want to see. And I think college football does it excellent, like, with their targeting rule. I think they have that down pat. Like, you get the review, you have somebody on the side that calls for the review happens, it's a yes or no decision, and you move on from there. I think with this rule in place, there's going to continue to be gray areas, and I think teams are going to continue to be affected by it, and nobody is going to change it unless somebody really makes a drastic stand on it. And I don't like to see the NFL not making changes, because they are at the forefront of this. Like, the 4th and 15 rule, like, you should go ahead with that, and you should go ahead with common sense rules. I think fans, honestly, should be able to allow write-in rules so that they could vote on, because, I mean, ultimately it comes down to viewership and TV deals. Let's have some say, you know? I mean,
that's,
you gotta have
that. Yeah, I never even thought of that.
I mean, not saying, like, you would, like, hear every rule, but, like,
right, of course,
if, like, a select group of people that were chosen, like, season ticket holders, for example, like, you give every season ticket holder a password, and they can put in 5 of their own rules, and they would be presented at the governor's meeting or whatever you want to do. But to me, it's just they're continuing to get in their way and not doing themselves any favors. Like, the thing to me that I hate is that rules could be in place for a single year. I absolutely hate that. You don't even give it time to evolve. I mean, I'm a big data person and data analysis. Like, you need so much sample size. And, like, especially that pass interference rule, you literally only had it for one season, and then it's gone. Like, as long as you're going to do things, I'm fine with it, but just eliminate the gray area. So hopefully this is a step in the right direction with that.
Yeah, so basically this rule, I kind of take it as, basically, you know, if a team were to score a touchdown, but, like, there's a penalty there that would negate it, you could still review the touchdown because, let's say, you know, it's third and 10 and Carson Wentz hits DeSean Jackson on a 50-yard bomb for a touchdown. Maybe the other team wants to still decline the penalty if it's not ruled a touchdown. Like, let's say you can't get both feet in bounds or something like that, and they can decide to, you know, negate the penalty, decline it after reviewing the play and realizing that it's not a touchdown. That's kind of what I got from it. Not something right. that's you
seems
know, really,
like too much gray area, like I
yeah,
said.
I
like,
agree.
It seems ridiculous.
There's also the other one. There was a couple more rule changes. One to, you know, more protection for kickoff and punt returners. The other one, Gino, I thought was funny. This I call the Tennessee Titans rule, the Mike Vrabel rule. It was. So here's the description. It prevents teams from manipulating the game clock by committing multiple dead ball fouls while mm-hmm. the clock is running, which is funny because the Patriots, of course, Bill Belichick was the first person to do this, and then the Titans did it to the Patriots in the playoffs, and now the NFL said, you know, we're going away with that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that once the dark side turns on itself, then it turns back to light, you know? It's kind of funny. But, yeah, all in all, I agree that it was, like I said, gray area in the rule, so they cleared that up. Like I've said time and time again, the NFL just is a rule on top of a rule to replace another rule, and that's what one of these is. But at least they're getting a handle on stupid things like that, because I know not many people were pleased with how that game ended. Like, I would have loved to see Tom Brady have one more chance and go down the field, of course,
yeah.
but... I mean, now you had that ability. But Mike Vrabel, it was a very well-done effort, and one of the things that you look at good coaches and great coaches, the great coaches know all those little rules. You know, like, they know those little intricacies. Like, it's one of the Belichickian-esque type mannerisms that has been used for so long, and I think doing that, getting away with it, was excellent on his behalf, but thank God it's gone because nobody
yeah.
wants to see teams
no,
like that.
I'm with you. I'm glad it's gone. It was, however, really funny to see Belichick just seething at the mouth on the sidelines, knowing
that especially you know that that's basically how the Death Star went down. You know,
yeah,
it's
right.
like when they're there and like they can do nothing. They just hear the alarms around them and like Luke Skywalker takes off Darth Vader's
yeah.
mask. You know, it's like. There's nothing that they can do right now,
that's
and that
was
awesome. The yeah. last 5 minutes of that game.
That's the funniest part is that like there's nothing they could do. It ended the dynasty basically of Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, and it was by one of their own sneaky, you know, little walking the fine line of the rule book kind of plays, and it
yep.
was really really funny. Coming up next on Lockdown Eagles, we're going to get into some overlooked potential big time contributors for the Eagles in 2020. Me and Gino will give out two players each in segment two, and then another player in segment three. Today's podcast is sponsored again, guys, by our good friends at Built Bar, basically a candy bar, a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. They also have the awesome Built Boost energy mixes. You can put them in a water bottle and make your water taste like black cherry lemonade, strawberry pineapple. There's so many awesome flavors. And for the bars, it's a healthy alternative, 20 grams of protein and also 20 flavors. There were 16, but they added four new ones for your orders: peanut butter banana, pineapple upside down cake, coconut pecan pie, and blueberry lemon. You can get $10 off your first order at BuiltBar.com by using the promo code LOCKEDON. And also this week, until the 31st, you can get an additional $5 off. So $15 off total this week when you go to BuiltBar.com and make your first order by using the promo code LOCKEDON. We'll be right back. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri on the Lockdown Eagles podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back into the show. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri. Gino, there's a bunch of players, obviously, that are going to be instrumental to the Eagles' success in 2020. The entire offensive line, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, of course, Carson Wentz, Zach Ertz, Doug Peterson on the sidelines, Miles Sanders, DeSean Jackson staying healthy. But I feel like there's a bunch of guys that can be huge for this team in 2020, and whether or not they're a good team versus a great team. And I have a couple players in this segment that I want to talk about on defense specifically, and I know you have some guys as well. So let's start with you. Who is a player that right now, you know, everybody knows is going to have a role with this team in 2020, but a player that maybe is overlooked that could become a star for this team and a huge contributor that is, you know, instrumental to the success of this football team?
I think you can look at the defense, and especially the defensive line, and I got two guys here, but I'll just start with one at the edge position, being Josh Sweat. I mean, we hear about this Derek Barnett, like they picked up his option. What is this going to be? Is it going to lead to an extension? So on and so forth. But what's plan B if Barnett goes? I mean, Brandon Graham is getting up there. Let's not act like he's getting any younger. You need a third defensive end, especially with that rotation, to just come up and be able to play Chris Long amount of snaps, you know? Like, that's the guy that they needed to replace after that Super Bowl run. And did they do it really well? I mean, they did it with Michael Bennett, but all in all, I don't think they did it completely to the extent that they should have. But still at edge, you're going to have a DE3 role to be filled. So, Josh Sweat, this is his time for the taking. I think with a good offseason, another year to just get stronger. I mean, he's just continued to fill into his frame time and time again. From the, I think he was like 245 coming out of college. He got up to 265 last offseason. Really just looks like the Predator, you know, like how he's built in his long arms. And as a run defender, definitely a question marks there. But to me, in Jim Schwartz's defense, especially his defensive line, he especially said that with Malik Jackson, that he doesn't care about run defense. Like, he wants his guys to get after the quarterback. And to me, Sweat from the edge position last year could have made a case from being the best edge rusher. I mean, Brandon Graham was very good from the three tech, but coming off the edge, I got to say, Josh Sweat just time and time again was coming up and making big plays. So to me, repeating what he did and increasing that workload is going to be huge for him to make that next step.
Yeah, I'm really excited about Josh Sweat as well. I would say, like, I think Brandon Graham obviously was your best defensive end last year throughout the entire season, but the first month of the year, Gino, remember, the pass rush was really struggling, and I thought they got their biggest boosts when Josh Sweat would come in, and he grew tremendously, going from no sacks in 2018 and barely ever playing to 4 sacks last year. And again, coming from Florida State, where they just didn't really utilize him all that well. I hated the way they played him. They just did not utilize his strengths as a pass rusher, more so worrying about the run game there with the Seminoles. And I think so there was a lot of upside, but he was more of a raw prospect that wasn't developed that well in the ACC. So we knew this was going to kind of be a little bit of a project in the fourth round of the 2018 draft. But the step he took last year is so exciting, because I think, honestly, again, like you said, with Derek Barnett, he's good enough now to still be a starter. Who knows what's going to happen with that contract? I wouldn't be surprised eventually with his talent, his physical capabilities, and what we saw flashes on tape last year, if Josh Sweat ended up becoming better than Derek Barnett. I wouldn't bat an eye if that were to happen, and they're going to need him next year. You know, if they don't bring back Vinnie Curry, I know they're going to use Malik Jackson more on the edge a lot next year, and you bring in Javon Hargrave. Your defensive line looks really good, but you know, if Vinnie Curry doesn't come back, who knows what they're going to have in Jannard Avery, if Sharif Miller is going to be able to become anything, you know, Joe Osman coming back healthy, Deshaun Hall still on the roster as well. Like, they need Sweat as that defensive end three, considering how much Jim Schwartz likes to utilize his pass rushers. Gino, I'm going to stick on the defensive line as well, and I mentioned Malik Jackson and the role he could have this year. I don't think he's going to be as featured as he would have been last year next to Fletcher Cox with Javon Hargrave coming in. Like, that guy's going to be on the field pretty much 100% of the time. You're going to want him and Fletcher Cox together on the interior. But I still think Malik Jackson's going to have a pretty big role, and I do think you're going to see him out there. Like, I think just because Hargraves is in Philly now, I don't think that's going to mean Malik Jackson's going to be on the sidelines. You're going to see a lot of times where Jackson, he did this at in Jacksonville with the Jaguars. He did this in Denver with the Broncos. I think you're going to see him playing on the edge a lot with Cox and Hargraves inside, and I think he's going to be able to get to the quarterback. I know he didn't stay healthy last year, and he's an older player in his 30s now, but this is a player before that that pretty much stayed healthy his entire career, and he's a really good pass-rushing defensive tackle. I think he could get back to that 2017 form where he had 8 sacks. He's going to be going up against, you know, I think the favorable matchups up front, and I'm excited to see what he can do when healthy. I mean, they didn't get to see it at all last year. I thought, you know, Hargraves is the best defensive tackle Fletcher Cox has ever played next to, right? I said the same thing about Malik Jackson last year, and they got, what, 3/4 out of it?
Without a doubt. And to me, you line up in your NASCAR package with Brandon Graham at the 5-tech. You throw Fletcher Cox at the 3-tech, Javon Hargrave at the 0-1, and then on the opposite side at the 4-I, the inside arm of the 4th-tech, you have Malik Jackson, and which would be fantastic because all of those guys can get to the quarterback. And like you said, you got 3/4 of them out of him last year. You're going to have a full offseason to get healthy. Now with Javon Hargrave there, and the next player that I'm going to mention is also there for their rotation. It's going to be necessary to keep guys fresh out of anything, because last year you've seen what happens when they run out of defensive linemen late in games. I mean, you look at that Miami game. Just look at how long they were on defense. At how winded those guys were. They weren't making a stop. Everybody knew that. Just because of exhaustion. Like, they run their best when they can run bodies in and out of that rotation. And you talk about a Super Bowl champion in Malik Jackson being your DT3. Whew, get out of this world, man. Like, they're going to be so fast up front. I am so excited to see what they do there next year.
I'm with you 100%. Gino, who is another player for you that could be a big-time contributor in 2020 for the Birds that's maybe being a little bit overlooked right now?
Yeah, while we're on the topic, I think it's very fitting to what we were just talking about. Just think about how many times in the last 2 years we've had to see defensive tackle or interior defensive line, however you want to look at it, number four, number five, number six.
For sure.
When the starters went on the field. When you have Albert Huggins and Anthony Rush taking important snaps off of the street a week prior when they played Buffalo. Hassan Ridgeway, to me, is a huge X factor for this team. I mean, they gave up a draft pick, which somebody corrected me on this. I kept saying it was a fourth. It was a seventh round pick for Ridgeway. I don't know why it was. I thought it was such a high pick, but somebody did correct me on that. But to me, he's another guy that, yes, you have Malik Jackson this year, but after this year, do you think you can afford those three guys still? With Cox, Hargrave, and Malik Jackson? And we know that In my eyes, Hargrave is honestly the prized possession out of the two between Jackson and Hargrave. So they're going to keep him, but who do you keep at DT3? Do you have to draft another guy? Do you have to depend on guys coming off the street again? No, you want to be able to, like I said, run that rotation, run four defensive tackles. Like, you'll see times when it's Fletcher Cox and Hassan Ridgeway inside, or you'll see times when it's Hassan Ridgeway and Javon Hargrave with Malik Jackson. Like, now you're going to have the ability to throw a bunch of different looks at them. Hassan Ridgeway, in my opinion, if he was on the field last year and they didn't have to rely on Huggins and Rush, I think they do are way more successful pass rushing the ball last year. I mean, he was very good. His first step started to come on in after the first couple of games. Once Tim Jernigan got hurt, he really started to step up and was playing some good time ball. So another offseason in that system, inside with an insane amount of talent behind Cox, Hargrave, and Malik Jackson. If he's going to play 15 to 20% of the snaps, those are going to be important snaps. And as long as he's healthy and they can have that rotation, that's where this engine of this defense clicks, is from getting pressure in the interior and allow the guys on the back end, which you now have with Darius Slay back there, and then just let the pass rush do its thing. And that's what Schwartz wants when he signs these guys, and what he loves Brandon Graham to do, and what he loves Fletcher Cox to do, and what he brought Barnett in here to do, what he really hasn't done the last couple of years, and that's get after the passer. And this team relies on getting after the passer, and you just can never have enough of them. We talk about it all the time, being like a bullpen in the playoffs for the MLB. You have more pass rushers, I guarantee 9 times out of 10 you're going to win the game, because that offensive line, which plays the entire game, is just going to get exhausted and beat up, especially with those four guys on the interior.
Yeah, 100%, Gino. They're not super deep at defensive end, but they're deep up front on the entire defensive line. I mean, again, you have Derek Barnett, Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, Javon Hargrave, Malik Jackson, Hassan Ridgeway. That's six really good options right there, and also Josh Sweat, who we talked about. So you have seven, and I expect Jannard Avery to do something this year with the Eagles, coming through a full offseason, hopefully staying in that playing weight he was at his rookie year,
where
he
was able to who they get a fourth for.
Yes,
that's
exactly. Yes. So, I mean, you have realistically eight guys that you can cycle through this defensive line and stay fresh. And I think Malik Jackson, Josh Sweat, Hassan Ridgeway, the three guys we've talked about so far, they're going to be big time contributors for this team if they can stay healthy. One final one here in segment two. I'm going to stick with defense, actually, and it's linebacker TJ Edwards. I don't think he's going to be a three down linebacker. I think you're going to see more of Jatavis Brown, Nate Geary, maybe Davion Taylor later in the season, or if he can develop more this offseason. Pretty raw player for a third round pick, but I think those three have that style of a linebacker you want more in sub packages against the pass. But Edwards, on first and second down, specifically against the run, I think is their best linebacker. Out of 111 linebackers in 2019, he was rated number one in tackling efficiency. He did not miss a single tackle. And I watched back some of the film before the show. I mean, his gap penetration, the discipline, his decision-making was so good against the run. Really good vision. Gino, this is another one of those killer undrafted free agent signings by Howie Roseman in this front office. And Pro Football Focus is with us. They have him as the one of the top second-year breakout potential stars on defense. They graded him second highest among all linebackers against the run last year. So, again, Edwards isn't someone you want in the slot lined up against, you know, a running back like Christian McCaffrey or one of the, you know, George Kittle this year when they play San Francisco. But for the role that he's going to be in this year, I think he's going to be a stud.
For all the signings that they've had, and to me, I put this out there yesterday, I've been reading the Match Quarters book by Cody Alexander and going through the Quarters defense, and a lot of the signings that the Eagles have made, to me, fit exactly what they want to play in a Quarters defense. And somebody challenged me on that, saying Schwartz is more of a cover one type of guy. He only played cover one out of necessity last year. Like, he didn't have his guys. And I said that this is the first year in Philadelphia that, to me, he has all of his guys. He has his number one corner that could cover. He has two safeties on the back end that he can interchange with McLeod and now you have Kevon Wallace there as well, and Jalen Mills to play that Malcolm Jenkins role. So to me, you're only going to need two linebackers on the field for, I'd say, at least 80% of the season. So to me, it's a competition between Davion Taylor and Jatavis Brown at the weak side backer, and those will be your cover backers. And then you have TJ Edwards as your Mike. And to me, I think you're in a pretty good situation, because if you deploy Darius Slay, Kevon Wallace, Rodney McLeod, Will Parks, and your CB2, or Nickel Roby Coleman, like, you have so many different matchups that you could throw out there in your nickel defenses. And to play base for this team, it would just be keeping the better resources off the field, in a sense. Because if you went to three linebackers, you'd have to bring Nate Geary onto the field. I mean, and you don't want to do that. You want to put your better defensive backs out there. So you got to run more of these quarters coverage, run more of these two high type of coverages. Don't expose your linebackers, because they got beat up bad last year in the secondary. Like, once teams got to the second level, you had Nate Geary back there missing tackles time and time again. That killed them all year, dude. Like, they need somebody that is a sure tackler, and Edwards did that. Like you said, his point of attack, like, is very good to excellent. Like, when he's in a gap, he's making that tackle. He's a guy that you could drop him in the fire and short zones and curl flat drops, but he's not going to be a top cover guy. But to me, you could play him all three downs as long as you have three cover guys to the field with him. You know, like, he could be a Mike that solely focuses on the four gap and solely focuses on the run and is your tackler. Like, you can't afford to have Nate Geary out there again next year. You just cannot.
Yeah, I'm with you. And again, like, I think in those situations where they have 5-6 defensive backs out there, I don't think TJ Edwards will be there, you know, in third and longs and those kind of situations. I think that will be Jatavis Brown, Davion Taylor, hopefully not Nate Geary, but I feel like Geary, he has the respect and the trust of this coaching staff. I don't know why, but I think for, again, the role that Edwards will have, I think he's going to be instrumental, because, Gino, you're right. I mean, I go back especially to that Sunday night game, the first game against the Dallas Cowboys, and how egregious the tackling was by Geary and by Kamu Grugier-Hill, you know, on that second level against Ezekiel Elliott, and the lack of discipline on play actions and, you know, misdirection. It was brutal to watch, and I think with Edwards, it's the complete opposite with how disciplined he is and how efficient he is as a tackler. I think he's going to be huge for this team, and it wasn't just those guys, Gino. I mean, even Nigel Bradham, for as reliable as he's been since being signed in 2016, Bradham had some tackling issues last year too. So that's a huge important aspect of this defense that they've got to get corrected. And I think Edwards is a key to that.
Without a doubt. And you said it, he's the most surefire tackler there. Just a disciplined type player. Isn't the best athlete in the world, we know that, but I mean, he has enough athleticism to get it done inside the tackles. Like, inside the hash marks, he will get it done for you. Not a guy that can get to the get to the edge of the field. That's why they drafted Davion Taylor, someone with unbelievable speed. That's why they brought in Jatavis Brown, somebody with unbelievable speed at the position. But let Edwards do what he did at his time in college and his time last year, be that Mike, and he can succeed. I really think he is a big player come this season.
I don't think I don't think they have a stud linebacker that's going to play every down this year. But, Gino, the more I watched Edwards from 2019 and the more I've looked at the tape of Jatavis Brown and Davian Taylor and just the roles and, like, what linebacker is going to mean for this defense compared to how valuable defensive backs are going to be, I think they're going to be fine. I think the niche roles that Edwards will have, that Taylor will have, that Brown / Geary will have, I think they'll be okay. Coming up in segment three, I have an offensive player I want to get into, and Gino will have one more player that could be a potential big-time contributor for the Birds in 2020 that might be a little bit overlooked through all the big signings and draft picks the Eagles have made this offseason in 2020. Louis DiBiase, Gino Camilleri joining you. This is Locked On Eagles. We'll be right back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Eagles fans across the globe, thank you so much for tuning into this Thursday edition of the podcast. If you missed any of our previous shows this week or over the last couple weeks, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on any platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, you name it, Google Play. We're available, and also on LockedOnEagles.com. Gino, I have an offensive player that I think could be, and I'm saying could because there's a lot of things that might need to happen for him to be on the field again, like he was in 2019. But if he does play, I think wide receiver Greg Ward could still have a role, a big role, in 2020 with the Eagles. I think, yeah, again, he's fighting for his job. He's not one of the set-in-stone starters this year. He's going to be fighting with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, with Marquise Goodwin, with John Hightower, with Quez Watkins. Who knows what will happen if Alshon Jeffrey is on this roster and if he does recover from this Liz Frank injury, what will happen if he comes back. So there's a lot of things that need to happen for Greg Ward to be on the field again like he was down the stretch in 2019. I think J.J. especially will get that first crack at being the third receiver with DeSean Jackson out there with Jalen Reagor. But again, no one knows how he'll develop in year two. I am hopeful that he will be that guy they don't need Alshon Jeffrey anymore because of. But, you know, again, with JJ, there were some alarming things in 2019, so there's no guarantee there. And same with Marquise Goodwin. Like, I think he has a better chance when healthy of playing versus Greg Ward, but we all know his track record staying healthy. He's never been able to do it throughout his career outside of one season in San Francisco, where he almost had 1,000 yards. But again, like, with Goodwin, the injuries, with JJ, the unknown there. And especially speaking of unknown, I mean, Hightower and Watkins, we have no idea what you're going to get there. I'm hopeful, but again, late round picks like that, we've seen what can happen with a Shelton Gibson and a Mac Hollins. So I don't know. They very well likely, and especially if Alshon's not back, they could need Greg Ward again to be like that primary slot receiver. And I'm not hating the idea of that. Again, I want Arcega-Whiteside to be that guy, or Marquise Goodwin, or Hightower, or Watkins, but if it is Greg Ward with Reagor, with DeSean, with Ertz, Sanders, Goddard, I think they'll be okay. I mean, you gotta remember, looking at the numbers, that guy over a month span, down the stretch, over four games, he was on a 1,000-yard pace if he had played, you know, 16 games. So I think you could do a lot worse there as a, you know, fourth or fifth or sixth passing target, and the fact that that guy might be end up being your fifth or sixth receiver is pretty exciting. But I think there is a way this year he's a big time contributor.
I think that Greg Ward should be a big fan of Nelson Agholor simply because he has kept his career alive, and that is being Greg Ward's. Because to me, with Agholor being so bad, they literally could not even sign him to the veteran minimum because he was that bad here in Philadelphia. And the Raiders took him on and got him out of here. Greg Ward now has a chance to be the primary slot receiver. You hit it right on the head. I mean, a lot of these guys are outside receivers. What they wanted JJ to do was a lot of Z receiver stuff or X receiver stuff. And they tried to train him at Z, and they tried to train him at slot, and he couldn't do any of it, so they really didn't use him. Now you don't have your slot receiver in Agholor. He's gone. You're going to have a lot of guys that are kind of change, kind of move style slot receivers that aren't primary slots, but Greg Ward excelled in that position when he was in the AAF. I mean, he blew the doors off to that league. Then he comes here to Philadelphia for the third time and actually has success. And one of the things that I'm looking at in Greg Ward is the comfortability that Carson Wentz has with him. You saw how comfortable reliable he was throwing the ball to him.
Yeah.
The chemistry was there. Yeah,
it was definitely there. It grew tremendously over those four 4 weeks. I mean,
look at that last touchdown against the Redskins, man. Yeah. Like, he just put up a ball on a fade route or on a slot post there, and he just let him go
third
get
downs?
It.
How many key third downs, Geno, against the Redskins, the Cowboys, and the Giants as well down the stretch? I mean, there were so many crucial plays where Wentz went to Ward, and Ward came through. That's the thing that Ward provided last year. Wasn't a ton of explosive ability. He's not a big guy, but he was so sure-handed, and he created separation.
Yeah, that's the key, too. I think the separation he was able to bring was huge for them, and you saw what happened with Aguilar when he couldn't separate, and they really couldn't move the ball across the middle of the field outside of their two tight ends. And as good as those guys are, you have to have multiple options. We know that. But to me, Greg Ward is the front runner to win that position. I mean, I think if he doesn't, though, he's a fringe roster talent, in my opinion, but he does have a good opportunity to win that role. I mean, right now you have him and a bunch of unproven guys that could go in the slot. I mean, Jalen Reagor hopefully will be playing at your X receiver position. Hopefully Alshon Jeffrey is in the game plan. And then whoever wants to take the slot, like, it's a competition. Competition is going to be great at many different parts of this team next year. Yeah. Cornerback, linebacker, safeties. It's going to be very intriguing, especially at that wide receiver.
Yeah, for sure. I think Greg Ward fits the slot the best of all the options. I don't know if he'll be the... I think there is a very reasonable, realistic path where Ward is that primary slot guy, and he is a big-time contributor again for this team in 2020. I don't know if he'll be the favorite, though, because I don't know if their plan... I think they're hopeful that their plan won't be to have that primary slot guy, because I think they want, first off, DeSean Jackson and Jalen Reagor. Like, those are going to be your two receivers that play the majority of the time. But they want J.J. Arcega-Whiteside to be a big-time contributor this year. So if that's the case and J.J. looks good, it's not like you're not going to have DeSean Jackson or Jalen Reagor out there. So there's going to be a lot of moments where DeSean plays inside. I mean, and we all know how good he is in reduced splits anyway. I think there will be times where Reagor plays inside. Even like as a big slot, maybe there's certain matchups where Arcega-Whiteside plays inside. And if it's not him, it could be Marquise Goodwin. And I think that's the thing. I don't know if just because Greg Ward's a primary slot receiver, I don't think that means he's just going to be that guy for the team. I think they would rather go more so with a talent approach rather than fit. But again, we don't know with Arcega-Whiteside. We don't know with Goodwin. So that kind of leads to Greg Ward if Hightower and Quez Watkins don't become anything. And you're right, though. You mentioned Alshon. If Alshon is on this team and he's healthy, he will play. And then I think at that point, Greg Ward is your, you know, fifth or sixth guy. Or maybe, I don't know. That's what's crazy about Greg Ward. I could see him being a full-time starter. And I could also see him not being on the team. Like, if John Hightower...
Right, that's exactly what I'm thinking.
I mean, because you really like John Hightower. You were high on his tape at Boise State. If he comes in and, like, suddenly turns heads, or Quez Watkins does the same, who is a guy I really liked, if one or both of those guys shine, maybe Greg Ward doesn't make the team, which is it's pretty crazy. Is there one more player for you before we wrap up, Geno, that could be overlooked right now as a potential stud for this team next year?
I gotta say, not that he's being like overlooked, as much of which his position has taken a greater importance over the last offseason, and that being Boston Scott. Because a lot of people know what he did last year, but there was a lot different things happening from running back three on this team to running back two. I mean, you look at how they ran Ajayi and Blunt. They split a lot of those carries. You look when, we're not even going to look to that 2018 rushing attack. That was terrible. But you look to last year, you have Miles Sanders and Jordan Howard. That's really how they like to do things, that kind of committee light, I'll call it, because it's not really three full guys running through there. It's more two shares the workload, then you sprinkle some other guys in there. But to me, you have Miles Sanders, and who's your next guy up? It's Boston Scott. Can he take on that workload? To me, he isn't overlooked. I think people saw his talent. The Eagles saw his talent when they got him off of the Saints practice squad. They saw his explosiveness, his separation, his burst, all great things you need in a running back. But how is he going to hold up getting maybe 12 to 15 carries a game if he splits with Miles Sanders, or let's say 9 to 11 carries? Like, how is he going to hold up doing that? Like, you got to be able to do that for 16 games as that second running back, especially in Philadelphia where they like to churn them through. So if he goes down, you're now left with Corey Clement, Evander Holyfield's kid, Elijah, and a whole bunch of undrafted free agents because they haven't signed a veteran running back. So to me, the importance of that role that Boston Scott is taking on, he cannot be overlooked. Like, that running back two role is huge for this team to succeed, because as much as they love Miles Sanders and as much as you're going to be able to keep him on the field, the way they want to use him is both in the run and pass game. He's going to need a break, like, for sure. I mean, unless he's Christian McCaffrey, like you said, he's going to need a little bit of a, let's loosen up the legs here, let's get somebody else in the game. And Boston Scott is going to have a big role for this team, and he better hold up in a big way, because that cannot be overlooked for how important it is.
I think it's fair to say he is overlooked, because right now there's so much talk about them bringing in a veteran. I mean, there was a report today.
Yeah, that's fair to say.
Yeah, because they offered Devonta Freeman a contract, I guess, and if that doesn't work out, I guess they're going to turn their attention to LeSean McCoy. That was according to Jeff McClain earlier today. So I think it is fair to say Scott's overlooked, and right now, Gino, like, he is your RB2, and while I don't know if he'll get 12 to 15 carries a game, I think he can get that many touches. I think when Sanders is off the field...
I apologize.
No, that's okay. I'm thinking kind of the same thing, where when Sanders is off the field, like, Scott is the next person that... Yeah, if you have a power or more of a traditional style running back, like, even though Freeman's explosive, and I still think McCoy is too, they're more so, you know, all-around type running backs. When you want the Sanders type, where you can use him in the screen game and he's just, you want a monster in the run after the catch area, that's Boston Scott, and that's what he was down the stretch last year. So I'm excited about what he could do, even if a veteran does come in. I think Scott, I don't know. I mean, with Freeman and McCoy, maybe they'd most likely be second in touches, but I wouldn't be surprised if McCoy was the guy that came in as your veteran running back, Gino, but Scott was still second in touches at running back this year.
Totally agreed. I think McCoy would just be like your kind of saving grace if Miles ever went out for a game. Like, you have that guy that could carry the workload. But yeah, to me, I think Boston is too good to not give touches. I mean, you saw his ability to make men miss. Yeah, that, they needed separation in the worst way, and their two best receivers for a stretch were both out of the backfield.
I know, isn't that funny?
Yeah, it's crazy.
When they needed, because of course you had Ertz and Goddard as your most sure-handed receivers and reliable, Greg Ward too, but like, when you needed an explosive play, you were going behind the line of scrimmage, which is kind of, it's crazy again to just show the situation they were in last year and what Boston Scott's
thing before we wrap up on this is that they lost Darren Sproles. Yeah. They have somebody, and Doug Peterson has always had that role in his mind for a guy like Darren Sproles. Like, he always has that, it's prototypical to say, but scat back style of player, and Scott is going to be that. Like, you're going to need guys that can come out of the backfield and win leverage one-on-one when you need a third and, or you have a third and short, you know? Like, how many times did they have Darren Sproles run that same route? Get onto the linebacker, read his leverage, break the other way. Like, that's what I imagine they're going to do with Boston Scott. Get him in space, give him those bubble screens that you've given him, give him those pitches, just let him use his speed, because they need it everywhere, man. Like, you talk about speed at wide receiver, Miles Sanders coming in last year was such a saving grace at that position, because they were big and plodding and had Wendell Smallwood, who couldn't find a hole if he went to a hole store. That was a terrible pun, but I mean, like, now you have a guy in Miles Sanders, and one of my favorite runs was that run against Buffalo, and how big just having speed and explosiveness and bursts out of the backfield is, because if you have to have guys come down and protect the box, just good luck defending that 4-3 speed on the outside. And if you could run two back sets with having Jalen Reagor and Marquise Goodwin or DeSean Jackson on the outside, like, how are you going to protect that? Like, I am so intrigued with how defenses are going to defend the Eagles next year.
I agree, Gino, and that's the thing. I mean, you can get creative with Boston Scott still and Miles Sanders on the field at the same time next year instead of, you know, having two tight ends. There might be times you have two running backs, and those two, I think they're going to be huge for the Eagles in 2020. I'm glad they finally added that explosiveness at wide receiver, because last year, I mean, it was only their running backs that were creating those chunk plays. I mean, last year, Miles Sanders accounted for 50%, 50% of the Eagles' 40-plus yard plays in 2019. Again, that is it's crazy, and Boston Scott was the other guy down the stretch that was providing that. So I'm with you. I think he actually is a little bit overlooked just based on all the news over the past couple weeks about veteran running backs, and I'm excited about his role still in this offense and Greg Ward's and all those defensive players that we mentioned earlier. That's going to do it for today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. Thank you so much for tuning into today's edition of the show. Me and Gino will be back tomorrow. Until then, make sure to follow us on Twitter. We'll talk birds always right after the show. Let us know what you think at DiBiase LOE, at Gino_LOE, and our show page is at Locked On Birds. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on any platform that you listen. Hopefully leave us a 5-star rate and review. It's how we grow the show and continue to churn out 4 to 6 episodes a week. I also post all the podcasts up on LockedOnEagles.com, so if you want to go over there to the mothership, you can check out the shows as well on that platform. For Gino Camilleri, I'm Lou DiBiase, signing off as always. Thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and let's go Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.